Welcome into You're the Cure right here on AM 580 with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, Functional Medicine, Veritas Medical. Of course, check out the website, veritasmedical.com. Let me say good morning once again to Dr. Ben Edwards. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Wade.
Good to see you back.
Thank
in
you.
The saddle.
Good to be here.
Yeah, it's Monday. Of course, special guest on the program today. By the way, if you have a question, we always get a lot of calls and texts on the show here. If you want to do that, you certainly can throughout the broadcast this morning. 806-745-5800, 806-745-5800. Along the way, you can call or text in. But we have a special guest on the program with Dr. Logan Stanley. And we already have a text coming in. I'll take that later. It's about Monsanto. But let's go to Dr. That's a long story.
I don't know if we're going to be able to tie Monsanto into this conversation today.
Yeah,
possibly. We'll see.
Okay. If Dr. Ben hasn't seen this yet, text coming in. Okay. Okay, I'll get to him in the break on that one. Okay, so let's go to the guest, but nevertheless, the texts and phones are open. Good morning.
All right, Dr. Logan Stanley is with us this morning. Dr. Stanley's a biological dentist, which a lot of folks don't know what that means, but it's kind of a holistic or natural dentist. But Dr. Logan Stanley is down in Marble Falls, but he was born and raised in Big Spring. He obtained his Bachelor of Science degree in Zoology from Texas Tech University and his Doctor of Dental Surgery degree at the University of Texas Dental School in San Antonio, one of the top in the nation. Dr. Logan and his wife, Courtney, married in 2005. They live in Marble Falls now with their five beautiful children. They practice at Stanley Dental with Logan's father, Richard Dickey Stanley, who used to practice in Big Spring. So, Dr. Stanley, welcome to the show this morning.
Are you there? Let's try. Oh, there you go. Let's try it again. Are you there?
Yeah.
No,
yeah,
sorry
yeah.
about that. I had the wrong button pushed, but we're good now.
All right, we're flying now. Logan, Dr. Stanley, I'm going to call you Logan, though. We're buddies, so
great.
Welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Looking forward to it.
Well, the reason I wanted to have some biological or holistic dentist on, and I was so happy when Logan said he could do it. We send a lot of patients his way and his father's way. But the reason I wanted to broach the subject of dentistry is because a lot of people don't realize the connection between the mouth and your physical health, the rest of your body's health, from heart disease to Alzheimer's to autoimmune to you name it. Of course, our listeners understand inflammation is kind of this common denominator amongst all Western diseases that we're seeing this massive tidal wave of. And the connection between inflammation in the body and the mouth is pretty enormous.
It is.
So we want to educate the listeners a little more because it's a little bit frustrating. And kind of like me in medical school, we learned a certain set of facts in medical school, but it wasn't all the facts. I didn't learn everything there was to know, obviously, in medical school as far as things that could be beneficial to my patient, in particular nutrition. And I think it's probably the safe to say the same thing in dental school. Conventional dentists learn a certain set of facts, but then there's some other things outside of conventional education. And so a lot of the dentists here in town that my patients see don't quite have this deeper knowledge. So that's what we want to do today is start the education process with Dr. Stanley. Of course, there's a lot to get into, from fluoride to silver fillings to root canals to gingivitis to you name it. So it may take two or three shows. But first, Logan, I'd like to start with you just sharing with folks kind of your story. I think obviously your dad, I mentioned, practices with you, but or maybe share some of his story even. But how did y'all get into this non-conventional or more natural way to do dentistry? Because it's obviously not something you learn in school, I'm assuming. So share with the listeners kind of how you got to where you are today.
Yeah, well, again, thanks for having me. You know, you had mentioned about that, you know, our mode, our type of medicine that's practiced this day and age, especially in the U.S. and for Western mindsets, is very compartmentalized. We like to kind of treat our bodies like we would an automobile, and parts go wrong, and we tend to not put together the whole. And the mouth is a very integrated and integral part of the body, very much so. And so I like to think that I would have gravitated towards this kind of philosophy or approach to dentistry, knowing how my mind works. But this is a bit unique. I do practice with my dad. My dad's been practicing. He was trained just like I was, just like most dentists are traditionally, which still we do a lot of traditional dentistry. A lot of what we learn, we still practice. It's really more of the mindset and the approach that changes. He was approached early on. He did some radio shows and all out in West Texas on the GLC. He got to know Dr. Massey real well, which was kind of a segue in, but there was a dentist that approached him and said, hey, there's more to this. You need to look at this. You know, gave him some books and gave him some information. And so that's really what tipped him off. And this is back when I was younger. So I've worked in his office, been around, you know, obviously him my whole life, and now practice with him. And it's all I've known. And so I'm real fortunate and blessed to say that I never really had to unlearn and dislodge a lot of these ideas and just kind of the approach. This is really all I've known. We've had a few life events that has changed that. We went through a deal with my sister where we lost her to cancer, and at the time we took a very traditional approach to that. I was younger, and although we look back on that as, you know, a real sad time, that really was the point where we started looking beyond and saying there's a lot more to being well and to attaining health. And so, of course, that applied to dentistry is just as pivotal as it is applied to medicine for you and any other physician that would make that kind of that change, that migration to a new mindset. So that's a little bit of my story. I know you've had some real kind of titans on your show. I've listened quite a bit. I have a lot of respect for the people you've interviewed, researchers and all. I'm a clinical dentist, clinical provider. I read the research. I stay up on it. But most of what we do is applying what we feel is true, applying what we see works, working with different physicians and different providers, and ultimately trying to help our patients attain whatever goal it is for their health. And most of the time that is, it's to address sources of inflammation, sources of toxicity, and ultimately try to get them to a better place in their health.
Right. Well, and that leads us right into kind of the two things over the past 6 years since I started practicing more integratively or functional medicine. Inflammation is, like I said, the common denominator with so many of these diseases. Well, inflammation is the immune system turned on. The immune system turns on typically to fight a bug or a toxin is kind of a simple way to think about it. So let's talk about those two things, because bugs and toxins both can come from the mouth. And I don't know if you want to start more with bugs, which would be more gingivitis root canals, or start more with the toxins, which would be the silver fillings. But so I'll let you just take it from that perspective of bugs and toxins and tell us how y'all's approach might be a little different than a conventional dentist.
Yeah. Well, traditional dentistry, you know, focuses on correcting dental problems, addressing pain, fixing problems. They choose materials based off of performance, how well they hold up in the mouth, how long do they last, how good do they look, cost. And there's a lot of really good traditional dentists that do really good work. What changes a little bit on our end is we kind of add that layer of, okay, well, how is this going to affect the body? How is this going to contribute to any further to any underlying, you know, inflammatory conditions or degenerative, you know, conditions, autoimmune issues. We're still dentists. We still want people to have great teeth and have those teeth last them for a lifetime. But it really does change, it changes your approach. It changes how we approach a case. It's important, again, just like it is in your practice. You listen to your patients. What are their concerns?
Right.
What are their goals? How can we help you? We need to be the tailwind for them. And oftentimes, some of the things that we'll talk about, I'll say aren't popular. Some of them aren't. Some of them are just, it's just unfamiliar. And so a lot aren't comfortable with some of these unfamiliar. There are some some topics that do get a little, patients or, dentists will kind of take their corners based off of what they've known. But in terms of, starting, the big things that we look at are, of course, things that contribute to any underlying inflammation toxicity. Mercury fillings are always kind of the big one. Most people have heard about that. In fact, I'd probably say everybody to some degree has. I don't think there's anybody that would dispute the toxicity and how harmful mercury in and of itself can be. You've got World Health Organizations and United. You've got these international treaties, even our own organizations will admit there's no safe levels. Zero is the level you want to go for in terms of exposure. All the health concerns and the negative effects on our bodies, top to bottom, on a cellular level, enzymatic level, the methylation pathways, any biological system, there's no place for it. So I don't think anybody disputes that. Obviously, when you bring in the ways that we're exposed to it, mercury fillings is for most people, the statistics would say, is their number one source of exposure to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, that's kind of the big one. Most have heard of that, and depending on the concern level on their part, but most of at least are familiar with that.
Right, and so I want to just tell the listeners, we're talking about the silver-colored fillings. Some people call them silver fillings, but their amalgam is probably the proper name, but mercury is a big component. An amalgamation of multiple metals is what that silver filling's made out of, so lots of different metals put together, but mercury's the primary component of that. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Logan, but in school y'all are taught when you kind of put all these metals together, amalgam them together, that they're stable and the mercury just stays in that amalgamation and it doesn't leach out anywhere. So is that the kind of the standard educational point? And maybe the reality is, no, the mercury does leach out over time out of that filling.
Yeah, amalgams, alloys, silver fillings, mercury fillings. Amalgam technically, from a chemical standpoint, is incorrect. It's actually considered more of what would be called a solid emulsion, which they're about 50% elemental mercury. Stuff that, people come in and say, I used to play with that stuff as a kid, put it in your hand, watch it run around. Everybody knows what it looks like. Hopefully you haven't done that, but a lot have. There's about 25% silver powder, tin, copper, different types of trace metals, and they get mixed together. But what happens is most of that mercury remains unreacted and recoverable, meaning it doesn't just all, bond together and you've got this nice little hunk of metal. You blow these things up on an electron microscope, and you can actually still see the elemental mercury in its fluid form. And these go in our bodies and stay at about 95 to 100 degrees. And so they do. They will leach out a small amount of mercury vapor throughout the life of the filling, and that's been shown. That's exaggerated with heat, friction, all the things. We drink coffee, we chew food. Granted, these are really small amounts, but, you put a bunch of this in somebody's mouth, and we know that they will outgas for the life of that filling. And it's a chronic, constant exposure. So there's really no, and that was disputed at one point even by the American Dental Association. Well, now they'll say, and they have said, they do leak. It's just small amounts, not enough to harm you, and the benefits outweigh the risk. Well, again, you don't have to go very far to know that there's no safe level of mercury, and that's a position taken by a lot of these, these world councils and even our own regulatory agency.
Right.
So, and they do. They leak throughout the filling. There's a lot may have seen the little, there's kind of a video, it's online, but you see it around where they'll actually take the mercury in front of a little phosphorescent screen, put a certain wavelength of light. You can see it. It's like a lit cigarette. And, you exacerbate it with heat and friction and things that we do on a daily basis. And you'll see it come out.
Yeah,
and it's right there. It's absorbed through the mucosa. It's, we breathe it in.
Right. I think people can see that video online on YouTube. I think it's called The Smoking Tooth. I send a lot of my patients to it. And, and you can just see the mercury vapor coming right off of the tooth with this special camera that they have. And, of course, worse with brushing or heat, like Logan mentioned with coffee and stuff. I think we have a text real quick, then we'll get back to
this. So Dr. Stanley, question from a listener saying, I've had unusual symptoms for the last 10 years. My equilibrium has been affected, and oddly enough, when the lights are dim or even dark, I feel very off balance. Also, if I'm fatigued throughout the day, I have that off balance sensation as well. Do you think that old silver fillings could be the root cause of this? I have six. I'm eating clean, exercising, and taking good supplements, but they have only made a marginal difference.
Yeah. Well, my answer to that first would be our bodies are dynamic. Everybody's different, right? And so that's just reality. I've got patients in my practice that have had these things for generations, decades, and presumably, at least clinically, are unharmed. I'm not saying that is the case necessarily, but that what may affect some may not affect others. And you get into the biochemical pathways and all the other things that affect our ability to methylate, detoxify. So everybody's different. Now, in terms of the amount of mercury that we know come off of these, I mean, that's a simple benchtop experiment. You put a mercury filling in a test tube and, measure the soluble mercury. They can do that. They know what comes off. And we know that the amounts that come off can be concerning. And then you look at just the known facts of mercury, elemental mercury. You know, it doesn't stay in its ionic form. It usually is bound in the body and disperses. You've got the organic mercury that, of course, comes from eating mercury. Our own biome, our own bugs in our gut can methylate this stuff. But, the effects it has is a neurotoxin. Its effects on nerves, nerve degradation, nerve transmission, motor coordination, and the cardiovascular issues. One thing that's interesting that a lot are even less familiar with is the galvanic activity, which I think is huge. And there's stuff, there's science, and there's been plenty of people that have brought that to an attention. But the interaction of all these dissimilar metals inside our mouths, the battery is two dissimilar, charges of metal or ionic makeup in an electrolyte. So the saliva acts as a pretty good way to swap electrons. You can measure these galvanic currents, and the whole issue of having all this interfering electrical fields and galvanic activity not only increases the dissolution and the amount of metal, whether it's mercury or nickel crowns or any other type of undesirable metal, but what is that doing to us on a level that we may not even totally understand? And they have linked that to some degree with tinnitus, ringing of the ears, eye issues, obviously equilibrium, vertigo. So I think anybody would say, I would venture to guess that it's certainly plausible, knowing the amount of mercury that comes off of these, and knowing what mercury does in a living biological system, to say that whatever, issues that person is suffering with, it's plausible.
Now, what about this, another text that says, well, I went to go see my dentist and talked to him about this, but he had said something about removing an old enoglum can actually weaken the tooth. What do you have to say about that?
There's a lot that will still say, oh, well, use it in the back. It's so strong. The fillings themselves are strong, but, I would say, and this is backed up by pretty traditional, we're not practicing dentistry in the early 1900s anymore. We've got materials now that are way stronger. And so the idea that we need to keep using this material because it's stronger, the material itself may hold up well, but they dramatically weaken teeth. You can look at the dynamics of an intact tooth versus, say, a resin-bonded tooth versus an amalgam tooth. Removing them, we'll get into the protocol. Most will say, leave them alone, you'll get more exposure removing them, and they are absolutely correct if protocols aren't followed, right? So, there are a lot of protocols and concerns and cautions we take, and other biological dentists, we're not the only ones doing this, but well-trained biological dentists or integrative dentists, whatever we want to call ourselves, I wish everybody would move that way, but, there's protocols to protect In terms of that question specifically, anytime an old restoration is removed, you get to see what's under there. A lot of the times, teeth will crack and fracture and break due to these fillings. I mean, these dramatically weaken the teeth, and so the idea at that point is safely removing the material, finding a suitable, compatible material that we can replace it with, which are now resin, metal-free, and then kind of going back to traditional dentistry, using methods and techniques to maximize the strength of that teeth with these new resin-bonded, much more compatible materials. And I would say that if you compared the same size restoration amalgam to resin, it's pretty clear that resin will reinforce the teeth more. They've got their own set of concerns and things that we have to watch out for, just physical properties. But so I don't know if that answers that question or not.
Yeah, I think it does, Logan. And I just want to go back and summarize. I want to make sure people didn't miss this. The galvanic current, which is basically like the battery in your car. I mean, two opposing metals, two different metals with an acidic solution in between or electrolyte solution in between. That's a battery, creates a current. And that's what happens in the mouth. You have, a silver filling, then you have a gold crown, and you have saliva in between, and it creates this battery effect, which creates this electron energy shift. And, I mean, we haven't gotten a whole lot into this historically on our show about how the body, at the real quantum level, we're a body of electricity, we're energy. That's acupuncture meridians and all these other things we'll get into someday, but we are absolutely electrical at our core. And so when you start messing up our electrical circuitry potentially, and that's the question with the galvanic current, everything from DNA replication to mitochondrial function, there's a lot of question marks there. So could that be contributing to this lady's equilibrium and other issues? You can't say for sure, but you sure wonder. And that's why we go back to our basic philosophy of Veritas is give the body all it was intended to have. What did God intend this body to have to perform properly? And remove from the body everything it was never intended to have. As Logan said, there's zero biological pathways in our body, chemical and biological pathways that need mercury. There's zero. And it disrupts just about all of them. So we can't say absolutely for sure for this lady that texted, but what I tell my patients, especially if you've given the body all it needs from a nutritional standpoint, a hydration standpoint, an exercise standpoint, and a peacefulness standpoint, not stressed out all the time, if you've hit these real basic foundational things and you're still inflamed and still symptomatic, and we know you're being daily exposed to a toxin of any sort, if it happens to be silver mercury from these silver fillings in your mouth, then we have to, if you're going to live by that philosophy of give the body all it needs, avoid what it doesn't, then you would have to take that next step of remove those. As Logan said, we can't say for sure. Some people live with these for a long time, many years, and do we think okay, at least they think they're okay, or we haven't linked these or haven't seen symptoms. But for this text, or I would say it's definitely something to consider. And then I want to make one comment, Logan. I don't want to get too political here, but I had a dentist that moved to Lubbock from the Dallas-Fort Worth area approached me one day, and this was some years ago, wanted to have a private lunch, and he didn't want me to use his name publicly, so I won't. But basically, he wanted to share his story that he had all, and I forget his exact symptoms, but some significant physical ailments that caused him to have to stop practicing. And then someone, I don't know who, one of his patients or somebody told him, well, look up mercury toxicity, mercury poisoning. And he did, and it fit his symptoms almost to a T. And, I mean, he was a dentist putting in amalgam all day long, exposing himself all day long. And so he followed some protocols to detoxify himself from mercury. And lo and behold, he got better. And he was just absolutely amazed and obviously convinced that this mercury toxicity thing is a real deal. And he started talking about it. I think, I don't know if he advertised or what, but basically his colleagues in town kind of ridiculed him and sort of outcast him and compromised him, and to the point he had to move. And he moved to Lubbock specifically to start a new practice. And he was scared to really talk about this. Basically, he didn't want to compromise his ability to be accepted by his colleagues here in town and to grow a practice. So there can still be quite a bit of pushback, I would say, from some dentists. Is that true?
Yeah. I mean, we're all, you know, somebody like that, you know, you hear that quite a bit. I mean, some of us are called to be martyrs. Others of us want to, you know, I mean, we get this information out. It isn't a, I mean, this is not the, and I'll say this isn't the accepted stance by, you know, the ADA and some of these different ones. But it is. It's still a stigma a lot. We like to, this goes for medicine. It goes for dental. It goes for religion. I mean, we tend to hang on to these things that are comfortable and traditional, and we don't, we need to move. I mean, you know, when we're presented with maybe new science, you know, amalgam's been around since the mid-1800s. How many other things are we using in medicine that we used in 1850?
Right.
And so, I mean, it's time to move on. One thing that I'll mention, a couple of things, too, that you kind of touched on. Dr. Boyd Haley is a great researcher. That guy is fantastic. He's done a lot to supply some of the doctors, physicians, practitioners, dentists with some great research. But he did a lot of research, too, on the synergistic toxicity of metal. Lead and aluminum, mercury and lead, aluminum and mercury, you know, and you give rats a certain amount of mercury and it kills them. You give a certain amount of lead and it kills them, and aluminum. But when you start combining these, it's like 1 plus 1 equals 10, sometimes 1 plus 1 equals 100. And that's something else that's very different from person to person is, well, what do they have on board? You know, I mean, how do they methylate? How do they detoxify? Are their detoxification pathways open? You know, and so there's a lot there to that. You know, I won't say it's subjective, but it's a very personal decision, and that's the point we make. I mean, you know, we'll talk to patients, and here's what we see. Here's the information. We really encourage patients that are well informed. You know, and they'll make a good choice, and it is their choice, and they need to be at peace with that. You talk a lot about peace. Anything that we might recommend or discuss with the patient, I'll tell them, if this isn't something you're confident with, if you don't have a piece about it, you know, but, you know, there's other ways to go. Maybe there's more information that needs to be understood. But, and then lastly, and then we might can move on to another topic, or if we'd like to discuss this more, but the protocols are very important. When they are removed, you know, there's a lot of protocols followed. A lot of that we studied under the privilege to study with Dr. Huggins, my dad mentor, you know, under, he was a mentor of his. I got to study with him. And a lot of the protocols he put forth and others were to use barriers, ionizing fans, sequential removal sometimes according to the galvanic activity, techniques to remove them, making sure patients are protected, have a adequate, you know, isolated air supply. You know, there's a lot there that if it's not removed properly, you can expose a patient. The dental offices and dental schools are an environmental nightmare.
Yeah.
I mean, if you went in there with the mercury, and they've done this, I mean, the amount of mercury in the air, you know, you talk about that dentist getting sick. I mean, it's just time and time again where what dentists are exposed to, what assistants are exposed to, hygienists, it's a real concern. That's just as good of a reason as all these other health reasons to say, man, we need to probably rethink this because it can be a big deal.
Yeah. So,
it is a big deal. Yeah.
So what Dr. Stanley's saying is you don't want to go just see someone to take these amalgams out. You need to go to someone who's been trained properly in these protocols, special rubber dams and extra suction. You want to have extra oxygen coming into your nose so you're breathing pure oxygen, not just the air that is full of the mercury vapors. You want to have negative pressure in the room or somehow to suck that air away from you with those vapors away from you. So there's a whole protocol. There's a website called the IAOMT.org. That kind of list all these different dentists who are registered with that organization who have learned how to do this properly. So we got a quick text, and then we're going to take a break.
Yeah, so this texter asking, can you give us an average price range to remove a silver filling?
Yeah, the cost, that in addition to whatever goals for patients, I mean, that's a big deal, and we're very sensitive to that, you know. It's hard to say. I mean, replacing a filling, and a lot of it depends on, I mean, dentistry is moving slowly behind medicine in terms of kind of migrating to this managed care protocol. And with that, you get into these groups where prices are negotiated. So prices are kind of all over the place. I mean, you could probably be safe to say, I mean, you're looking at a couple of $300, maybe $400 for a filling. Now, if we can keep a filling, keep it conservative, and maybe if that tooth has some life left without needing to move to more maybe invasive or a procedure that would strengthen the tooth more. So there's a lot of, like a crown or something like that, there's a lot of things that can depend on that. But, that is something that a lot are concerned about, and rightfully so. So, again, we're trying to, find ways to move patients and listening to priorities. You know, if it's a priority for them to address these toxicity issues, you know, we might go through and do kind of, I won't say temporary care, short term, but let's get the mercury out, let's get things stabilized. We can always come back and do more long term, 20-year plus type work fixes. But if their priority is, I need this, or it's recommended that this is done now to attain, whatever it is that they're going after, it changes how we treatment plan that patient. And we are very sensitive to that. Try to be, certainly. Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you, Logan, for answering that. We will take a quick break and come back and maybe talk a little fluoride or root canals. So stick with us.
Welcome back into You're the Cure right here on AM 580 with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, Veritas Medical. Check out the website, veritasmedical.com, for past shows. We archive them there. You can check them all out, veritasmedical.com. Special guest on the phone with us today, Dr. Logan Stanley, a doctor of dentistry and biological care?
Biological dentistry.
I love that.
Holistic.
I love that. We just went through some of that this not too long ago ourselves, and it's very interesting. I have a question for you, Doc. I know we're going to get into some other things, but real quick, I have a real quick one. I have not been a big proponent of this. I don't think mercury is a good thing. I don't. But my question is, for me personally, is that I just think that mercury doesn't – I'm not saying it's good for anybody, and I would never recommend even getting a mercury filling. But my question is, does it affect everybody? Because I have about 3 or 4 mercury fillings. But I don't have any symptoms or any problems,
That's debatable.
I knew that was coming. I knew it was coming.
I got to speak up for Melody here.
But what do I?
By the doctor there. Yeah.
But what do you say to those people like me that are somewhat skeptical that says, "Okay, yeah, I've got some mercury feelings back when I was a kid. They're in my head right now." I've heard some people say, well, you need to get them out anyway because it could lead to Alzheimer's, dementia. I don't know. I mean, I don't have any other indications that maybe I'm having a problem. What do you say to someone like me who's somewhat skeptical about this?
Well, if I had that conversation with you and that was what you said, to me, and we talked about it, then, I think it's safe to say, look, you know as much as anybody right now, probably more. And, what are you comfortable with in terms of, a lot of it depends on our approach to what does it mean to stay well or be well, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
A lot of things don't present as symptoms. We would never diagnose, diabetes or cancer a lot of the times if it was just a symptom, basically pain or I'm having this thing go on. So if it's a goal of a patient or, if through the medical history that we discuss or if it's, we're going off blood work and different markers and toxicity markers in the blood. And if it is something that is something that patient wants to do, maybe for a preventative standpoint, sometimes it's just a dental conversation. These fillings are old, they're cracking, they're breaking. Root canals we've talked about or saving teeth. The best way we can avoid these super invasive procedures is to prevent there being problems that lead to cracked teeth, broken teeth, pulpitis, and eventually, non-vital teeth. And, these any filling, but certainly old mercury fillings, silver fillings can, weaken the teeth. And so sometimes that's what we discuss with patients. And everybody's different. I mean, again, I'll admit there's patients in my practice. I've got a 92-year-old great uncle coming in this afternoon that, he's got things in his mouth. And here he is, 92, and lived a long, fulfilled life. So I can't say what you know, what is or hadn't affected him. But we do know, nobody can argue the fact that what mercury has the potential to do.
Right.
And, and so that's a lot of the times where the conversation starts, and it's just kind of going from there at whatever pace a patient's comfortable with.
But if I were to put it in a percentage, and this is just my own brain working here, although Dr. Edwards may say my brain doesn't work fluidly all the time. However, would you say that maybe, I mean, people out there who have this mercury feelings, could you put a percentage on it? In other words, 5% or 10% of those people who have those may be having other health-related issues, not knowing it's because of the feelings in their mouth. I mean, do we have any hard data to support what a percentage might be for those people out there and not making the connection? You know what I'm saying?
Well, that can be frustrating for patients that go, throughout a lifetime with maybe trying to address some of these problems, only to find out that the whole time they had no idea. The issue of informed consent, most patients don't even know they have these, or they were put in without their knowing. In terms of a percentage, I mean, that's tough. I mean, we can apply all types of regulatory exposure limits and percentages of what people are exposed to, and then, overlay those numbers onto other conditions that we know, any type of metal can lead to, the exposure. So, but, I mean, that's hard to say because there's so much more going on. What we don't want to do is get tunnel vision on a patient, say, this is it, this is what you need. That's not the approach. It's always in a lot more general sense. But that would be that'd be a tough question to answer.
So not 10%. You can't just throw a dart at it and go, yeah, 10%.
let me chime in on this. I'm chomping at the bit here. First, let me say, my whole goal, probably one of my number one goals and passions, is to get people educated and convinced before the bomb goes off. And I'd say 98% of patients show up at Veritas Medical the bomb has gone off, meaning they've had a heart attack, cancer, stroke, big-time autoimmune disease, have had it for 10 years. When a mammogram picks up a lump, that's the bombs going off. That fuse was lit 10 years ago or more. So these things that hit us, Alzheimer's, for example, or heart attack, stroke, we'll deal with these top killers. By the time you have a symptom, by the time you feel it, by the time you have chest pain, I mean, half the people with a heart attack, their first symptom ever is sudden cardiac death, meaning they had no symptom before. We don't want to wait until the Alzheimer's, cancer, and heart disease is diagnosed. We want to go 10 years upstream, 20 years upstream, find the lit fuse, and snip it right there, and not wait to try to clean up the mess afterwards. So that Western medicine's mindset, and therefore the patients, I mean, you're part of the Western medicine system. We all are. Our mindsets are, let's live the way we want to live, do what we want to do, and when I start having a symptom, the doctor will fix me. Well, by the time a symptom comes, typically you're way, way, way downstream. But to get to this point of thinking, education, education, education. And that's where it always boils back down. And I know people probably get tired of hearing it from me, but give the body what it needs, avoid what it doesn't. If we know mercury is toxic, can you live 100 years or 90 years or 85 years symptom-free and just die in your sleep? You could, but it's almost like Russian roulette.
I've got smokers that live that long, but nobody really debates that, I would say. So,
yeah, good point.
Yeah, and then also on top of that is, I think Weston A. Price published a long time ago, 100 years ago, that back in the early to mid-1900s, 20% of people could handle a root canal, meaning their immune system was strong enough, their nutrition was good enough, everything else in their life was good enough, they could handle some toxicity that came out of a root canal, but the vast majority couldn't. So now, fast forward 100 years, I mean, we live in Roundup Central. Just living in West Texas, we're breathing a cloud of Roundup all the time. Our food's totally nutritionally depleted. We're under stress. I mean, you can just start adding it up. And it kind of reminds me of what Logan talked about earlier. That's this Boyd, was that his name, Dr.?
Boyd Haley.
Boyd Haley. Yeah. But these guys that have done studies on different toxins where 1%, they give, say, mercury to a lab rat. And the amount of mercury that would kill 1% of the rats and the amount of lead that would kill 1% of the rats, you put that together, it killed 100% of the rats.
Yep.
Meaning a little tiny dose of mercury, no big deal, it's not going to hurt me. And show me a study that tells me that little tiny dose isn't going to hurt me. And so we go to all these studies are mono studies, meaning they're looking at one thing. Show me the amount of mercury that kills somebody. Well, it's got to be this much. But what this guy's study showed was just the small, tiny amount that only killed 1% of the rats when it was combined with a second toxin, lead or what, it killed 100% of them. So the compounding effect of, well, in your mouth, do you have how much mercury are you getting? How much Roundup did you eat today? How much bacteria from bacteria in your mouth getting in the bloodstream? How much stress are you under? How nutrient are you? You just have to add up the whole thing. And so it's hard to put a number on just one thing like mercury because we're multifaceted. We got lots of different things adding together.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, it's a philosophy.
You know, I mean, it can be a massive, it's a massive inducer of oxidative stress. Interesting, Boyd talks a lot about how in the electron transport chain, the mitochondrial function, not only it can really wreak havoc, but how it displaces iron.
Yeah.
We all know the issue of having free iron floating around inside our cells. I mean, it may not be quite that simple, and he's a lot more eloquent in painting that picture. But, I mean, again, if the goal of somebody is to address some of these known sources of oxidative stress and mitochondria, you know, optimize mitochondrial function, that's a lot of times where that conversation starts.
Right. And that's why I'm so key or interested in these predictive test and study. You know, we look at blood tests that are biomarkers and different inflammatory markers that a patient can be symptom free, but their C-reactive protein will be elevated, for instance. And like the lady that texted earlier, if her C-reactive protein is elevated, even though she's eaten non-inflammatory food, and C-reactive protein for listeners is a blood test that basically is a marker of inflammation. So if someone walks into my office and tells me they're eating a low inflammatory diet, meaning plenty of vegetables, some low glycemic fruit, nuts, seeds, eggs, grass-fed, pasture-raised meat and poultry, and water, tea, coffee in moderation. I mean, they're eating a basic non-inflammatory diet. They're moving around a little bit every day, meaning they're getting good oxygen. Maybe they're even doing a sauna to help detox. They're sweating to help detox. And they're doing all this great stuff, and their C-reactive protein's still high. I'm looking at the mouth. First, right off the bat, let me look at the gums, let me look at the teeth, or their silver fillings, or the root canals. So I know we talked about fluoride and root canals we were going to get into, but we only have a few minutes left. So maybe let's talk a little bit, Logan. We're going to have you back. But maybe gingivitis, because so many people have that. I mean, root canals are huge, and we'll touch on that too, but maybe speak a little bit to just gum disease and the bacteria that can get introduced into the body and drive that C-reactive protein and inflammation that you may not even know. You may be symptom-free, but the body's smoldering on the inside, and it'll manifest later as Alzheimer's or cancer or something.
Yeah. Well, we've got to address the biome of the mouth. It's just, I mean, the GI tract starts at the lips. That's the tube that runs through. As every surface of our body has a skin on top of a skin of bacteria that we depend on, right? Everybody's rowing in the same direction to try to benefit, you know, mutual benefit for all. We're super organisms. Somebody heard that term. I heard that term the other day. You know, all species are involved are working together for the benefit of all. So the biome of the mouth is very complex. The idea that, you know, brush your teeth and take some fluoride or chemical or whatever, you know, there's so much more to it. And, you know, when you start getting into uncontrolled inflammation and some of these pathogens, you know, that are allowed to thrive, you give them an environment to thrive, right? The pH is off of the systemic pH or the meds that a patient's on, if it contributes the host susceptibility, there's a lot there. But basically inflammation of the periodontium, the teeth, I mean, the gums and, you know, the structure around the teeth. And these bacteria, this is pretty well-established science. I mean, you can get on any website and see the risks between cardiovascular disease and, you know, diabetes, you know, rheumatism, things like that. Well, these bacteria that are causing all this inflammation in the mouth, we know they don't have walls in the mouth. They can get in and cause the same inflammation in the, you know, in the endothelium. the toxins that they produce, which are chemical, right, not living, they put out endotoxins that are extremely potent and that are very inflammatory. And so, you know, the goal there is we do a lot of base contrast microscopy. So traditionally you go in, get your teeth cleaned, polished, scraped, you know, and out you go till 6 months. Well, you know, those bacteria are always there, and we've got to, you know, we've got to identify them. So you look at them through microscopy, start to work with patients on non-surgical protocols, home care, you know, trying to balance, bring that biome back into balance, address the environment, optimize the, you know, the terrain so that in the bacteria, a lot of the times will self-regulate. And so, but the implications of uncontrolled or undiagnosed periodontal disease are pretty, very significant. And that's a huge source of just chronic untapped, I mean, kind of, you know, it's just, it can be very inflammatory. And you get all these inflammatory markers, and there's studies that have been done where it upregulates and modifies these systemic inflammatory markers. And so, yeah, that's another, that's one of the big kind of core things that we have to address and look at in patients.
Sure. Right. So basically there's a whole huge community combination of bacteria that live in the mouth, beneficial bacteria, just like the beneficial bacteria that live in our gut. And when these bacteria are fed the right things, the right diet, the right drink, when we're not filling it full of the standard American antibiotic-laden food, chemical-laden food, sugar-laden food. When you put the standard American food and drink into the mouth, and then on top of that, you throw in the standard American toothpaste that's full of chemical, fluoride in particular, and mouthwashes, and you're trying to just kill bugs all day long, then you get a complete disruption of that normal microflora in the mouth. All these bacteria start to get out of balance. The bad ones can overgrow, the good ones can be killed off, and you get this imbalance, and that is, I think, is what you're saying, is can be at the very root of inflammation of the gums. And when you get the bleeding gums, receding gums, all this gum disease, now you've got a portal of entry where these bacteria and their toxins they produce can leak, can sneak into your bloodstream. And once they're in your bloodstream, they float around the body and they settle somewhere and they drive inflammation.
In the advances of, I mean, what we've learned about just the biomes of the body in general are just, I mean, it's just coming day after day. We're learning so much more. And so I guess to say, as practitioners, kind of the humility that there's a lot more that's out there that we don't know about. I mean,
right.
but you start seeing these things that happen. One cool thing, I thought this was great. You know, they've shown where certain bacteria in the mouth can methylate and can, you know, they optimize nutrient absorption and waste removal, methylation, immunity. There's so much that goes on in the mouth, but how they can metabolize these nitrates. We swallow these, and these compounds, once they hit an acidic environment, is a huge source of nitric oxide, which you know and a lot know the implications of that on cardiovascular health.
Right.
Well, you get a biome out of balance, and now the bacteria that we rely on to do that are no longer there. They're not able to thrive. And, I mean, that may be one of a million links that we either know or don't know can link to cardiovascular disease.
Right.
But that's just one, I mean, that's just cherry-picking one thing that's, in my mind, pretty amazing that we, you know, that you can see that we depend on these harmonious relationships and these commensal flora to live,
right,
thrive.
Right. Yep. Nitrogen that's in the plant, that's in our food, in our spinach, in our kale, the bacteria in the mouth can while you're chewing that kale, takes that nitrogen, does stuff to it that allows your body to make nitric oxide, which is a beneficial molecule in the body for lots of things, cardiovascular mainly, keep your blood pressure down. So I like to tell my patients, look for a toothpaste that helps to encourage your good flora, just like we think about eat food, probiotic food that helps encourage good flora in your gut. I want to use toothpaste that encourages good flora in my mouth. And I haven't talked to you about this, so I don't want to put you on the spot too much, and we're about out of time anyways, but even some of the more natural toothpaste have bug-killing essential oils, tea tree oil or something in there with idea, let's kill bugs. But I tell my patients, number one, change your diet. Once you're off the grain and sugars so much, the flora starts to balance out the bad breath, that sticky film in the morning that's on your teeth when you're eating all that sugar. It's just that just goes away. And then you want to do a toothpaste that is full of prebiotics and encourages the good flora.
Well, and two couple of things, yeah. I mean, oils are effective and they're great, but they can be very effective in an undesirable way. Xylitol. I mean, I'm not anti-xylitol. I think it's got a place, but I mean, you look at it does what they say it does. It can disrupt the biofilm, which can can change how these bacteria can function. So I'm not saying don't use anything with xylitol, but you can overdo that. We use a lot with stevia, sweetened. If you need sweetened, some of the best things is alkalinize the mouth. Most people struggle with too acidic saliva, just like we struggle with too metabolic acidosis. We're just too acidic.
Right.
Because of the inflammation, but baking soda, diets that promote more alkaline environment in the mouth, proper hygiene, using different types of irrigants and things to, the war, and you talk about this all the time, the war is not against bugs. I mean, we might pick out certain bacteria that we know cause problems, but the mindset now is, well, let's focus less on trying to kill a bug, one of 150 strains. Let's try to optimize the environment, and it will self-regulate, and that's been shown. And
right.
So, yeah, toothpaste, have home care protocols, diet, there's so much that affect that, and it's not just as easy as let's eat what we want, do what we want, just brush twice a day, and drink a little water that we think helps strengthen these teeth. And, that's kind of proving to be an old way of thinking, I think. There's a guy, his name's Dr. Curtola. He's a dentist and researcher that does a lot about the oral microbiology, and I've learned a lot from him. He's got some really good stuff.
Right.
So somebody's interested.
Well, and speaking of that, we're out of time, so I do want to just throw out a few books that I've read, and you can confirm if these are good or you have some others, but someone gave me a book one time called A Mouthful of Poison, which sounds kind of dramatic, but after you read the book, you kind of go, yeah, it is. Dr. Myron Wentz, Wentz. Basically, what I love is he talks about the historical, the whole history of amalgam. Barbershop dentist versus medical dentist, and how we got to know about the mercury toxicity from Mad Hatter's disease over in England way back in the 1800s. And anyways, a historical perspective all the way up till today, that's a good one. Hal Huggins, Uninformed Consent. You mentioned in our talk today, informed consent. Your whole goal is to inform your patients, let them decide. And his book is called Uninformed Consent, that a lot of people just don't understand this connection between mercury and disease and inflammation. So those are two of my favorites.
Uninformed Consent is a good place to start. And we give these books out not for patients to leave and say what you said, go home and go, oh gosh, this is the sky's falling. It's just information. I mean, here's what you have. Here's what you may have been carrying around. And just, the more information we can get at the helm of maybe a good provider that can help facilitate kind of how they, how they go about that. We study a lot with the IOMP. You mentioned them. They have a website, and they've got some great resources. I mean, you can read their position papers that are just have more, scientific work cited about their position against mercury from every standpoint, biological, environmental, what's happening on the world scale. I would encourage people, maybe kind of boring reading, but man, it is full of good stuff. We've mentioned fluoride. We didn't really get to get into that much. There's a lot of great resources on that. And people, I mean, we are at a time where we have to take control of we've delegated our well-being and health for so long just as a culture and, time to start. Read up for yourself. Come to your conclusions based off of what you read, what you feel. I mean, there are some great providers out there that people place their trust in. You're one of them, and I commend you for that, that you're able to help so many people. But ultimately, it comes down to a decision. What direction do I want to go? Is this consistent with what I want to do with my health? Am I at peace with it? Is it something that's bringing me closer to that? Books. There's websites. Consumers for Dental Choice has a lot of great resources on some of the mercury issues on all aspects, not just the biological concerns.
Okay.
And there's some. You don't have to look far for it.
Right. Well, we're out of time, Logan. I sure appreciate you joining us. We're definitely going to have you back because we didn't even talk about the fluoride issue. We didn't talk about root canals and probably more, too. So we'll have to have you back for one or two more shows at least. But IAOMT.org, that's a website with lots of research and good information. Also has lists of dentists who are registered to take out mercury the right way. StanleyDental.net is Dr. Stanley and his father, Richard Stanley. That's their website. They practice in Marble Falls, Texas. So y'all check out their website. Check out these books. Uninformed Consent's a good one to start with. And get educated. Be informed because you are the cure and you can't be the cure. You can't let your body cure itself if you're not fully informed. So thank you, Logan, again. We'll have you back. Appreciate you spending the morning with us.
Yeah, thank you as well. Appreciate it.
Okay, bye-bye.
You've been listening to Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, right here on AM 580. You're the cure. Check out the website, veritasmedical.com, veritasmedical.com.